Welcome to Climate Matters. We are here today on this Climate March Day inspired by Greta Thunberg. And we are welcoming Greg Artzner and Terry Lilino of Magpie. Welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for what you do for the environment yourself.
Please. We're really happy to have a chance to participate and engage with so many wonderful people in our community, both Schoharie County and the wider community.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Yep. There are a lot of solid reasons to feel down and dark and pessimistic, and there are also a lot of very good reasons to be hopeful, and you are one of them.
Well, thank you.
I would hope that'd be good.
We feel the same way about you, dear.
Wonderful. So, can you, for me and for our listeners, can you kind of walk through how you guys came together as a couple, as a singing duo, and your orientation and how that's evolved?
Well, we came together in Kent, Ohio. Terry was a student at Kent State University, and I was a townie. I lived in town there, and I had a gig at a well-known local club there across from the main campus gate, and Terry found out that there was a gig, and she decided to come down and try to get the gig as a solo artist. I was singing as a solo artist. She decided to bring the women from her dormitory down to stack the audience, you know, and impress the owner, and that worked real, real well.
But I was an RA in the dorm, so yeah. I brought down 60 girls to politely clap for Greg and go wild for me.
And,
I played
great. And so naturally, we really liked each other right at the outset. that was in the spring of 1973, and the fall of that same year, we were both booked as soloists to perform at a one-day folk music concert on the plaza in front of the student union, and a third guy, a mutual acquaintance, Terry already knew him, his name was Rick Jones, she already knew him, I didn't know, I met him that day. He thought it would be cool to make a trio, so he called her up and said, how would you like to do that, and called me up and said, how would you like to do that. We both thought it would be a cool idea, but Terry was on duty at the dorm, so I had to go over to the dorm to meet there for our first get-together, and when I showed up, well, he never did. So that's how we got together, kind of. But then, you know, basically,
we found out we had everything in common.
Yeah, we sat there.
We talked till 4 in the morning.
Yeah. And what we had in common was, we both came from these big Catholic families. We both grew up working class. Terry's dad was a rubber worker. All of my brothers and my grandfather were all steel workers. My father worked in industrial sales. We were real working class, union kids growing up in northeastern Ohio, and we had all that in common. We also had a connection to the civil rights movement. My father left his industrial sales job and started working for the Urban League, so our whole family got involved in the civil rights movement.
And my family was from the South, and so my mom, she used to say, because she was an Arkansas girl, she used to say, boy, I at least knew when I lived as a child down in Arkansas where the line was, but up in the North, she said it was much more subtle racism. She didn't like having to come North just to marry Dominic, but that's what she did.
So anyway, that's kind of the background. I mean, we grew up in a time, you know, in the late 50s and all through the 1960s when all of these socio-political movements were growing up and were certainly had captured the nation.
Because we grew up in industrial Ohio, our river caught fire, the Cuyahoga, and you couldn't even see the sky in Akron where my dad worked.
Yeah.
The pollution was so bad.
Talk about baptism by fire. We had, I mean, that was the beginning, you know, in 1969, it was in June of 1969 that the big fire at the Cuyahoga, actually it wasn't that big of a fire, but in fact of the matter is that the Cuyahoga River had caught fire like 50 times before that happened, but nobody was paying attention the first 50 times, and then finally in June of 69, people did. And of course that was after, you know, almost 10 years after Silent Spring, and after we saw the sort of tactics, particularly the artistic tactics of the civil rights movement and the movement against the war in Vietnam, we saw how those things were inspiring people and fostering solidarity and helping to move these political movements forward, particularly the civil rights movement. And, of course, that was all happening at the same time that the environmental movement was, a nascent movement. It was just beginning to really gain some traction. First, of course, came Rachel Carson's groundbreaking book, Silent Spring. And then after that, you know, people started talking about all these various different issues. The first, obviously pesticides in those days was a big issue. And then it became one thing after another. It's pollution, it was population, and all of these various things. So we kind of grew up at the same time we were learning our music. We grew up during those times, and it sort of created a, I guess what you'd call a sort of an ethos of sense of responsibility, personal responsibility, and
direct action. You have to get out there and do stuff.
Determination to do something, you know. So our music, even before we came together as a duo, our music always had that dimension to it. We grew up with music as commentary, not just as entertainment, and so it was
even on our very first Smithsonian Folkways LP. That's how old we are. On the LP, Greg had written this song about how our highways were becoming part of the problem, how fossil fuels were part of the problem, and he wrote this beautiful song that's on our very first LP called "Limited Access."
Sounds like a wonderful song. I don't think I've heard that one, but I will look it up and encourage our listeners to look it up.
Yeah, we don't do it too often, but it's all about the I guess in a sense you could say it's a kind of a prescient song in terms of its commentary on what has happened in this country and with the oil economy, the oil and the automobile and the personal transportation economy. And that was, I wrote that song in 1971, a couple of years before I even met Terry.
Right, that's the limited access from Magpie back in 1971, and we're talking over how Magpie got started, and this is Climate Matters. The thought and motivation for bringing Magpie in for a discussion is fundamentally that many of us and many of our listeners are not necessarily inspired by spreadsheets and technical analysis and policy papers and white papers and scientific arguments, but arts, music, and ethics, aspects of life that hit us in our gut, in our heart. This carries a little more weight.
Yeah.
I would say a lot more.
Yes.
It certainly can. Our experience with it is that that bringing the news, bringing the message, bringing the imperative to people through song has a lot of different impacts, a lot of different effects on people. It can be very emotional. It can bring people to tears. It stimulate them to want to do something. It can educate them,
and
certainly foster a sense of solidarity if you're all singing together.
Mm. Often we have worked with over the many, many years of 46 years of Magpie now, working with organizations where we work hand in hand, helping to tell what's going on through the music, but also supporting the music with our CD sales. We have so many albums that really focus on the environment. Our first children's album is called Circle of Life, and our one of our most prominent albums in the environmental scene is called Living Planet. And then we did a special dedication, which Greg and I, a lot of Greg's energy, went into producing a album as a tribute to Rachel Carson. It was a 3-year project where we collected songs about the issues she was concerned about. And then we got Pete Seeger on it, and we got Josh White Jr. on it, and we got Tom Paxton on it. And then we actually had Rachel Carson speak at the end from the National Press Club about how her life was threatened because she told the world about DDT.